열어봤어.
소모로리가 토킥 투미 라디오 다다다다다다.
Welcome, 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 geeks and nerds, girls and boys, to a brand new episode of Geeked Me Radio. Tonight, we are talking with teacher, filmmaker, writer, Anne Nocenti, all about her career. We'll get into her Daredevil run, the stuff she's done for Marvel, other books as well, and some of her interesting interviews she's done with filmmakers, all that and more. Stand by.
We're talking TV, comics and movies, and video games. Star Trek from Star Wars, we'll try to explain. There are 12 doctors, 4 Hogwarts houses, 1 ring rules them all. To be the greatest Pokemon master, you must catch them all. You must catch them all. Try to catch them all. Gotta catch.
And for those of you driving around the greater St. Louis area tonight listening to us on the big 550 KTRS, hello to all of you. Thank you for tuning in. No video tonight because actually I'm not really here in the studio. This is pre-recorded. It is a brand new show because, as you know, I'm not going to leave you with a repeat or a best of. This is a brand new show that I'm bringing you. It's just it's been a long week, long weekend, and this is a pre-recorded interview that I am very pleased to bring you. Anne Nocenti had an incredible run on Daredevil. Daredevil is one of those books that I got into later as I was reading more Marvel, and I love the character. I've had D.G. Chichester on before to talk about his run, but Anne Nocenti preceded him and did a lot of stuff, introduced some new characters. She's also obviously worked extensively on the X-Men books as both a writer and an editor. Huge. I mean, just to talk about it as a preamble here would be spoiling the interview because we talk about a lot of this as we get into it. So without further ado, my guest is a journalist, a teacher, a writer, a filmmaker. A lot of hats. We're going to try to talk about as many of them as we can. We have Anne Nocenti on the show. How are you?
Hi, hello world out there.
It's so great to talk to you. I feel like I've been right around you. We had Louise Simonson on the show not that long ago. We've had Chris Claremont on. Dan Chichester is a friend. And you're one of those people I've always wanted to speak to. And the more I researched your background.
Well, it's funny because, well, Chris, of course, is a dear friend. And my latest five-issue series, Storm, was completely influenced by one scene he did in a Storm comic in the X-Men in the 80s. And I just picked up Jean Grey, Louise Simonson's first issue of the five-issue run, and I am loving it. Because, I don't know, my Jean Grey, the Jean Grey I love is the one that always makes you a little bit nervous to be in the room with her. And boy, is Wheezy doing that. She has me scared. And I just ordered the next issue, which looks like Wolverine gets the Phoenix Force. So, yeah, that's I love Chris, everything Chris does, everything Wheezy does, and Walt too, of course.
And you're still at that's great that not only are you you wrote and edited so many of these features, but you're a collector as well. Then you still collect the stuff.
Well, I don't know if I'm a collector. I'm more of a reader. I go into comic shops. I buy comics from my friends. I read first pages and buy stuff that's interesting to me and read them. I'm kind of a sloppy collector. For years I had these late librarians that came and they kind of would go through my collection and send them to schools in places like Nicaragua and, you know, Honduras and Guatemala, because apparently kids can learn to read English using comics. So they had a program to that, and they just used to come raid my collection. So I would say I have a very sloppy and picked over collection.
That's one of the things that Stan Lee always said. Stan Lee's got, if you want to get kids to read, introduce comic books in school. So that's great that that's actually being done other places other than the United States. All these other places are getting comic books and teaching kids to read. That's great.
Yeah, this was sort of they especially rated my books pre-internet. Now, I guess, you know, because you can get a subscription to a digital All Things Marvel, you know, it's a lot easier for kids to read, Spanish kids to read English comics, because wanting to know what happens next is the propulsion for storytelling, and that, and having like Easter eggs and secrets makes the kid want to learn harder to translate from English to their Spanish.
And talking about storytelling, all the work you've done teaching and filmmaking and screenplay writing and things like that, did you always know growing up, did you always wanted to be a storyteller in some form or another?
Well, I mean, I used to draw and write in journals and stuff like that. I think I was making some form of illustrated image things even when I was a kid, but I ended up as a painter and a lithographer and a printmaker. And then I decided, literally because there was not much work out there for artists in the 80s, and there was more work for writers. So I kind of fell into that pot instead of the other pot, you know.
And I think, if I'm not mistaken, you got your first gig writing at Marvel. It was the great Denny O'Neill who hired you.
Yeah, I think that, Denny O'Neill hired me to write a short story for Bizarre Adventures. And I was kind of saying, you know, I grew up, I loved Pogo and Crazy Cat, but I'm not that familiar with superheroes. And, you know, we had talks about Pogo and how Pogo was able to do everything from Spiro Agnew and Nixon and the Vietnam War. It was all, you know, Cuba, Castro. He turned them into funny animal characters. And this was like, you know, way before we had Mouse. And
yeah,
there was a level where kids could read it and just love all the critters in the swamp. And then there was a level where adults would go, oh, okay, it's a satire on the, you know, the state of American politics. And so, you know, Denny showed me his Batman stories and his Green Arrow stories, I think it was, and said, you know, just weave. And then Ralph Macchio gave me Daredevil to write. And Ralph was very supportive too. They were both like, look, we can tell you want to be a journalist. We can tell you want comics to have some kind of meaning in them. Just do it in comics. Just don't be preachy. Don't be one-sided. So there's, in my stories, there's always two sides. So even like the animal rights story, the dilemma of a farmer is in there too. The cost of trying to make my grandfather was a farmer. So I knew what a hard job it was. And I knew how little money was to be made in farming, because that was, you know, when he was a farmer, it was kind of the tail end of the great American farmer being able to make a living, and the rise of factory farms. So, you know, you just have to make sure if you're going to put an ideal, a social justice, they call it now, idea in a comic, you have to show all the angles.
And Daredevil was brilliantly written that way, though, because you had a arc on Daredevil, I think it was for almost 4+ years, which I'm trying to think, maybe Peter David had a slightly longer run on the Hulk, but that's such a long time. You introduced so many characters, and you did tell so many, I don't want to say street level stories, because Daredevil's a street level character, but such grounded stories, I guess, in that had to have been very rewarding, I would think.
Yeah, well, you know, it was also John Romita Jr., because John Romita Jr. was in the office a lot. He lived, I think, on Long Island, but his dad was, you know, John Romita Sr., who sadly we just lost, was he handled Romita Raiders, and Virginia Romita kept all our books on time. So they were like, along with Walt and Wheezy, they were like one of the families of Marvel. And if so John Sr. taught me how to go over layouts, along with Al Milgram and a couple others taught me how to go up. But John Sr. especially talked to me about the dilemma of, back then, most covers had to have two figures fighting. And that's a side view. It's really hard to have a dynamic cover with two figures fighting without having one person have their back to the camera. So John would go over covers and, you know, would cover sketches with me in order to make a dynamic cover. And Virginia kept all our books on time. I think before Virginia Romita came in as the traffic manager, the Marvel Comics regularly missed shipping. So it was the whole family was like drenched in talent. And so Johnny and I, you know, we would just, whatever we saw in New York went to the comic. And, you know, whether it was, we would talk about Bushwhacker, Bullet, Typhoid Mary. He designed Typhoid Mary based on an outfit a girlfriend of his was wearing. He came in one day and he was like, drew a sketch of a guy he just saw on the street. And he said, I want this guy in a comic and I want him to be called Shotgun. So that went right in. And so pretty much, you know, it's a lot of it was just me and Johnny, two New Yorkers who were keeping our eyes open, picking up what we could see in the streets and eavesdropping a lot and trying to make a comic that really felt like it came out of Hell's Kitchen. So, you know, we had a blast. I had a blast working with Johnny.
Collaborating with him on some of those characters, like the ones you just mentioned, how often was it, hey, I've got this idea for a character and John would draw it versus what you just said? He would say, I've got this look. And then you would give that look a persona and a name and details. Was it pretty much 50-50?
You're talking 35 years ago. So I can't really remember.
It can't be that long ago. The 1990s was only 10 years ago.
Oh, yeah, right. So, no, I remember Shotgun and coming in with Shotgun, but also a lot of it was like, you know, you'd throw a lot of ideas at your artist, and Johnny would throw a lot of, you know, artists throw a lot of ideas at the writer, and you just see what sticks. Like, you know, if you say something like Typhoid Mary, he just got it. He just got it. He designed it based on someone he knew. He nailed it. And you know, the other thing was Mephisto. We wanted to take Daredevil to hell. And Johnny said, I want to redesign Mephisto, because Mephisto was basically like, looked like a superhero in a red spandex suit, you know?
Yeah.
And he wanted to redesign him and make him like have these tentacles that were like how the devil has his fingers and everything. And, you know, Johnny, that he redesigned Mephisto in a way that made him like so much more understandable, because he's like, he's got all these tentacles and he's got these feelers out everywhere and he's always morphing and he's always changing what he looks like. And to me, that's a better, you know, devil figure than a guy that looks like a human.
Yeah.
With red skin. So that's my old work, but my new work is basically, like I was saying, the Storm. Mark and Drew, who are editors of X-Men Legends, they just called me up one day and said, we want to do a punk Storm, you know, series. And, you know, I think I was Wheezy's assistant when Paul Smith just drew this sketch of punk Storm, because they wanted to change her look. They thought it was time to change her look. And I think Paul rode a motorcycle and he liked leathers and, you know, so it was sort of like, I said, sure, I like that, you know, I like that look. And they sent me a couple issues. And in the two issues they sent me, one was, two things were happening in one of the issues. Rogue joined the X-Men. Now, Rogue is an evil mutant, so-called, so self-called evil mutant. And they let her into their mix. And at the same time, Storm changed her look and really upset Kitty.
Yes.
So it was this dynamic that was so powerful, because it was our mutants, a little bit good and a little bit bad. You know, the teen, they're young. The Kitty always would remind us of how young the mutants were. And so it felt like a perfect dynamic to explore how punk is Storm. And then the other thing I thought of a lot was, she had just beaten Callisto become the leader of the Morlocks and became the leader of the X-Men because Cyclops and Madeline were away on their honeymoon. And it was just sort of like, I started thinking, what if I suddenly was the boss of my closest circle of friends? Like, what would that feel like? Hmm. And, you know, you have to, if you just put yourself in that position, you think, well, you're going to have a little bit more remove. You're going to have to get a little detached. You're going to have be a little more boss-like. You know, you can't sit and have beers and popcorn at night. And, you know, you can, but you want to keep a bit of a distance. And so I started to think about how her kind of coldness and aloofness plus detached because she wanted to do a really good job as team leader, plus Kitty's anger, plus keeping an eye on Rogue, who nobody trusted yet. So that's where the starting point to that story was. And it all came out of literally like one issue of Chris's. Because Chris's stories were so good, but they also had, he would have a billion ideas and he'd leave a lot of loose threads hanging. And it, there, it's very rich era to pick up on a moment and say, you know what, that could be explored further. And, you know, I don't know how much of a market there is for people who want to read stories that go back 35 years in time. But I guess it's an experiment that Marvel's doing, and I'm happy to, you know, go along with it because it gets very rich in character because Storm now is a supreme evolved creature.
Yeah.
Storm back then was still struggling. Should I be in Africa? Do I have magic powers? Am I a witch? You know, who do I love? You know, she had so many like inner turmoil that you would have because back then they would have been, even though I think the Marvel timeline is you age a year for every 10 years.
Something like
she
that.
Would have been, she would have been like 19 back then.
Yeah.
You know, and maybe now she's 23, you know, or however old she is. But, you know, so you get a chance. You get a chance to write these highly evolved characters, but back when they were confused, didn't know who they were yet, you know, where do my powers come from? Is it magic? I have witches in my history. You know, is this witchery that I have? You know, why can I control the weather? Why does it not work sometimes? You know, so that was a really fun thing to do. And then layer on that, the sort of fun soap opera of Kitty being mad and Kitty's in a relationship with an older guy, you
right,
know, Colossus
right.
would have been older. And, you know, I tried to keep that very, very PG-13 because, you know, in hindsight, would a 13-year-old really have been with an 18-year-old? That's kind of a big gap for that age group. So
yeah.
We played it. And I think Sid Cotian did this great thing where he just sort of the love scene between them with the mermaids at the amusement park, he drenched it in this kind of like adolescent aura that really captured, okay, this is a crush. This isn't there. They might not be lovers. You know, this is a young girl crush. So, you know, I love what Sid Cotian did that with that. And then when the series switched to Geraldo Borge, and he started looking at photos of like Iggy Pop, and he's a lot of her fight scenes. He has her leaping like someone like, you know, Johnny Rotten or Sid Vicious or, you know, would leap off a stage. He really captured that kind of like punk performance energy, which I thought was really, really great.
And I love how you said not too many breaths ago that it was 35 years ago. It's hard to remember, but then you distinctly listed off the 35-year history of Storm Kitty Pryde. That was brilliant. I can barely remember what I had for breakfast yesterday, and you just gave us like a definitive rundown of Storm's entire character arc for the past three decades. That was amazing. We're going to take a quick break. We'll come right back getting the answer of how she researches the characters before she starts writing them. You're listening to Geek to Me Radio on the Big 550 KTRS. Please stand by.
Hey, everybody. everybody. It's Dan Gilvezan, voice of G1 Bumblebee and Spider-Man on Spider-Man and His Amazing Friends, saying welcome back to Geek to Me Radio.
Welcome back to Geek to Me Radio, a pre-recorded interview. If you're looking for the video, Joey V's not in the studio because I'm not in the studio. And this is a pre-recorded interview. You won't have heard this before because it is brand new. This is our 382nd show as we move toward our 400th. A lot of stuff being planned for that. Speaking of planning, hopefully you got out and planned this past month to go see Legends and Lanterns. This was our last weekend of it. Hopefully you got out for Pumpkin Glow and had a good time out there in St. Charles. If you missed it, there's always next year. Plus, there's always other festivals going on. St. Charles has something going on all of the time. It's a great place to go and see what's happening. If you missed Legends and Lanterns, they have Christmas traditions is right around the corner. It's crazy to think about that we're coming up on November. This year has blown by. So November and then starting the day after Thanksgiving, they launch into Christmas traditions, the biggest, longest running Christmas festival in the country. They've got a just incredible stuff that goes on out there. International gift givers from around the globe. Père Noël from France. Father Christmas from England. We have Snegurushka from Russia. We have Yuli running around, the Christmas goat from the Scandinavian countries. They've got the Nutcracker Prince, Herr Drosselmeyer, and the Sugar Plum Fairy are out there to interact with. You can roast chestnuts over an open fire. It's just a great time. And across those cobblestone streets, if you've been down downtown St. Charles, you know what I'm talking about. It's the perfect setting for this. And on Wednesday nights, you can do their Ebenezer Scrooge Christmas Carol walkthrough. You go from point A to point B and you literally go through a Christmas story. You're interacting with the characters from Charles Dickens' novel. You're interacting with Ebenezer Scrooge and a young Belle as they're getting engaged. You interact with Tiny Tim and Reformed Scrooge at the end of the whole thing. You talk to his partner, Jacob Marley. It's just such a cool thing to go do on a Wednesday night if you're looking for something different to mix up your holiday shopping. Walk along the cobblestone streets, check out the shops, get some great food, and just have a fun atmospheric Christmas out there. Friday nights, they change things up. You can go down to the depot in Katy Park, if you dare, for Krampusnacht on Fridays. You can interact with the Krampus characters like Grilla and the Yule Lads, and of course, Krampus himself in Santa's own chamber, which has been reconstructed to look like Krampus's lair. Get your picture taken there. It's a great time. And of course, every Saturday and Sunday, they do their normal festivals with the big Santa parade. It's just a great time. And even when there's not a big festival, St. Charles always has something going on. It's entirely made up of small businesses. You've got these shops up and down Main Street that sell unique things. You can pop out to the English shop to get your Jammy Dodgers and Jelly Babies for the 60th anniversary of Doctor Who, which is coming up this month. How crazy is that? Do you want to have your stuff right there so you can eat your Jelly Babies while you're watching that? The English shop will have you hooked up there. All sorts of cool places, no matter what kind of style you're into. If you're going to get some Christmas shopping, clothes, gifts, all sorts of things, and then enjoy some great food from local restaurants while you're out there as well. If you're out of town or if you're here locally and just haven't been there for a while, go to the website. Take a look. Plan your trip there. DiscoverStCharles.com. That's DiscoverStCharles.com. Check it out. Plan your trip. Start there. See what there is to do and then head out and have some fun. That website again, DiscoverStCharles.com. As we always say, it's an historically good time. Before we took that last break, we were chatting with Anne Nesenti, and I asked her how she researches these characters before she starts writing them.
Well, you know, one of the things is that obviously when you've got Marvel Comics is now up to 85 years of story, and it's so complicated. So you really do, you do your homework, you work with your editor, you read, you know, the Marvel wiki page, you and then you talk to people, what is your favorite Storm story, you know. And I knew a lot about Storm because I was the editor back then, eventually after Wheezy. But the, you know, I read, I think it was I want to say Greg Dugan or somebody like that had done, you know, I just Googled, you know, favorite Storm stories and bought some of what people said were their favorite Storm stories. And, you know, I just kind of, and then I read some of the X-Men Red to see what I saw where she was now. I learned about the island they're all on and, So, you know, you have to do a lot of research.
Yeah.
Not only do you do a lot of research into the character, but then you do have to do a lot of research into your theme, you know, what your theme is going to be. And in some ways it was a harder job. The other book I'm doing is Captain Marvel. I'm doing a 5-issue bridge between Kelly Thompson's work and the new writer. And that was a harder job because the Carol Corps, the fans are legion.
Oh, yeah.
And they love their Carol. And it's very hard to enter a book and completely grok what their Carol is. Mm-hmm. So you just do the best you can. And I'm a big fan of Kelly Sue DeConnick, and I love what she did to the character. And Kelly, I read a bunch of Kelly Thompson's work, and I saw, okay, she's bossy, she's arrogant, she's sassy, she's a little bit, you know, she had these like barbs all the time where a little bit cutting, you know, like she almost has one of those relationships with her girlfriends where they're always kind of like making fun of each other in ways that are almost hurtful, you know. So which is really fun because that's what good friends do. They're always digging on each other in a fun way. So I was able to sort of mold it from what I saw come before and then do a big space epic, of course. And my most favorite thing, though, was that they redid her origins to make a bigger deal about the time she spent in Maine. And I spend a lot of time in Maine, and I know lobstermen and fishermen. So I was able to open the book with Carol rescuing a boat from the sea. But she's dared by the other fishermen to do it without using her powers, and she does it. Hmm. So that was my way of saying, look, she's a badass. She can rescue a boat in a raging sea without using her powers, you know. And that was kind of my fun opener for her. And then because she's kind of bossy and thinks she's always right, I had her meet a bunch of kids, younger kids, who were like, kind of, who do you think you are? You know, sort of like the anger I get from my younger friends that are like, you didn't even leave us a healthy planet, you know, you left us a mess, you know. So there's sort of like that kind of doom and gloom thing that and anger and justifiable anger that kids can have with like, you completely polluted the planet to the point of no return. Now what are we supposed to do? This is your legacy to us, you know?
And you've written so many great female characters, strong female characters. Like you were just talking about your work recently now with Storm and with Carol, obviously Dazzler and Beauty and the Beast. There was obviously Spider-Woman, which you got to end that run. Mark Gruenwald was kind of helping you kind of guide those last couple of issues. Is there a character that you haven't had the chance to revisit like Spider-Woman, maybe that you'd like to go back and do another story for?
Well, yeah, I mean, I'm always interested in the strong female characters, but, you know, I like writing the guys, too.
Sure, sure.
But I was able, I mean, the two books that I must admit are closest to my heart right now are The Seeds and Ruby Falls. And Ruby Falls is a graphic novel that is drawn by Flavia Biondi, and the great Karen Berger was the editor of it. She has her own imprint now at Dark Horse called Berger Books.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah.
And so this was three generations of women. It was kind of a noir crime thriller. And Flavia Biondi, an Italian artist, her drawings are so lush and so natural and just gorgeous. And so that's kind of like a book that's pretty much other than the wonderful colorist, it's a book all by women. And then The Seeds with David Aja, I was able to sort of, Astra is a journalist trying to make her way in the sort of crummy world that journalism has become, and she's kind of a stand-in for me, so I was able to kind of put myself in a comic. And then David Aja, who of course is a master at the, you know, the graphics of comics, you know, he kind of put we met each other's obsessions. You know, I was obsessed at the time and still am probably with, you know, why are the bees leaving? You know, is tech become something that is making life worse instead of better? And what is going on with journalism these days? And so we were able to kind of, and then plus there's aliens, and then there's an affair, and then there's an alien human baby, you know? So we also get to do lots of fun stuff. And so those two books are really the two books that I'm the most proud of. And they're like, because it's, when you're writing a superhero story, you always feel like you're hanging yourself on the superhero or hiding behind the superhero. But when you do a graphic novel that has no, you know, IP owned superhero IP attached to it, you're really being yourself. And yeah, those two books probably come the closest to who I actually am, you know? So whereas when you're writing a superhero, you know, I'm not Storm. I'm writing Storm for Storm fans, and I'm not Captain Marvel. You know, I can't kick ass like she can. it's just a more personal thing.
And if you're listening right now, if we'll put links in the show notes, Seeds just came out in 2021, and I believe Ruby Falls came out in 2020, so they're still available. Go to your local bookshop. Ask if they have these, and if not, they can probably order them for you. And we'll have links to those in the description down below if you want to check those out.
Yeah, they're you can get them on Amazon, of course, and Barnes and Noble, or you can get them, I think, on the Dark Horse website. But the number, what you just said, the number one way we always ask people to buy comics is to go to your local store, support your local store. They don't have it in stock, then ask them to order it, because, you know, comic book shops are fun, and it's where you can meet people and hang out and talk comics, you know.
Absolutely. Just two more comic book related questions before we shift gears to your other work. I wanted to ask you about Longshot. This character has been co-created. It's a beloved character. I don't feel like it's enough love, though. But I saw that a picture was circulating on the internet, and maybe this would be directed more to Art Adams, but there was a picture of a young Tom Petty who looked exactly like Longshot. And I was just curious if you knew, was it influenced at all by Tom Petty's look? We're going to take another quick break. We'll get the answer to that very important, very interesting question from Ann Nesenti right after this. You're listening to Geek to Me Radio. Please stand by.
Hi, this is Neil Ross, the voice of a plethora of animation and game characters. One of them would be the Green Goblin in Spider-Man, who reminds you...
You're listening to Geek to Me Radio!
Welcome back to Geek to Me Radio. I'm your host, James Enstald. Geek to Me Radio, heard here on the Big 550 KTRS every Sunday night at 9 o'clock, 10 o'clock Eastern, 7 p.m. Pacific, for those of you who are listening out there in the world. I appreciate you finding us. And please, if you haven't already, go to youtube.com/geektomeradio. Find us on YouTube, Geek to Me Radio, subscribe. I'm trying to get to 1,000 subscribers. And if you could go there, hit that subscribe button and hit the bell notification. That way, every time we do go live with a show, if we are in studio, unlike tonight, you'll get a notification. Say, hey, Geek to Me Radio just went live. They're doing a live show in studio. Pop in. Give us a look. See who we've got in the studio. And hopefully you'll enjoy another great show full of geeky goodness every Sunday night. We'll make sure we tell you about our official comic book sponsor. Speaking of geeky goodness, Bugs Comics and Games. You can get them in O'Fallon, Missouri, easily accessible from either the page extension or from Highway 70. Go out there and see Larry. If you are new to the hobby, maybe you're seeing all these comic book movies and TV shows and you're like, I'm not sure where all this is coming from, but I kind of want to learn more. Go to the comic book shop that's got all the information for you. Larry is not only knowledgeable, he's got an extensive catalog of back issues. You can start with a brand new issue. They've always got number one issues, like She-Hulk number one just came out. Sensational She-Hulk as a relaunch of that title. That's a great jumping on point. but he'll be able to tell you, okay, like Spider-Man, here's what you might like. Or if you like Captain Marvel, be it the DC Captain Marvel or the Marvel Captain Marvel, he'll tell you where to go. He's got comics to fit any budget. He's got the $3 for $10 box. He's got dollar boxes. He's got normally priced stuff. If you're looking for some rare one-of-a-kind items, he has those too. Some really nice Bronze Age comics and Silver Age comics in his cases or along his walls. Go check him out. If you're looking to sell, maybe you're like, meh, you know what? I don't have anyone to leave these to. I want to pass these on to someone who will enjoy them, so I might as well sell them. Maybe you want to finance a vacation. You got a huge comic book collection. Go see Larry at Bugs Comics and Games. He'll give you the best price in town for your stuff, and you know it's going to be taken in by someone who is going to appreciate them and pick them up and add them to their collection. And as he quickly turns these comic books over, that's one of the things I love going out there, because A, he's got back issues. B, he always has new back issues. Every time I go out there, he's like, yeah, someone brought in a collection. So I'm going through, I'm like, oh my gosh, I love this. So I'm filling up my comic book collection as well. So whether you're buying, whether you're selling, whether you're new to the hobby, you're an old hand and just kind of want to get some of those holes in your back issue collection filled in, check him out. Go to Instagram too. He's on Instagram, brand new there. Instagram, you can check him out. Bugs Comics and Games, all one word, and is spelled out A&D, Bugs Comics and Games, and give his Facebook page a like as well. Bugs Comics and Games on Facebook. Very proud to have him as the official comic book sponsor here on Geeked Me Radio, especially as we talk to Ann Nesenti. One of the characters she helped co-create was Longshot, the X-Man who relies on his mutant power of luck. And there's that great picture. I'm sure you've seen it, of Tom Petty. If you know who Longshot is, you're like, hey, that looks like Longshot. So I asked her, this picture floating around out there of Tom Petty, who looks a lot like Longshot, was he the inspiration in some way for the character?
No, not in the tiniest bit. No, okay. No. It was influenced by David Bowie. I saw him. I mean, I imagine Tom Petty, yes, could look like Longshot. That's a funny notion. But no, it was more influenced by David Bowie's kind of androgynous look.
Okay.
And I always saw him as kind of an androgynous character. And, you know, the thing is, you throw these stories out into the world. And, yeah, I don't know that most writers and artists, we just hope they reach someone. Like, if a character isn't that beloved or it gets beloved, we never know. We have no idea what's going to hit and what isn't going to hit. But everything you do hits someone.
Yeah.
And I just came back from a Comic-Con in Memphis, and I had never done a con in that area before. And I was just surprised at the fans. Like, I had people bring me a Nightmare series I had done. I had people bring me, like, my one issue, you know, my a couple issues of Spider-Man that I had forgotten about. And, you know, there were all these obscure comics that I'd written that I'd barely remembered. And it turns out it was someone's favorite, you know, an issue of Kid Eternity, which I don't think sold at all. But there were people that collected the whole run and it blew their minds. So it's never really about pleasing everyone. It's about connecting with one reader. If you connect with one reader, that's makes it worth it, you know.
And I want to ask you briefly, too, about your run on Star Wars. You were editing that book when the book ended with issue 107. Did you have any, when it was such a huge property, obviously, I know we had Roy Thomas on who said that, you know, Star Wars saved Marvel at that point when they brought the book on. Howard Chaykin has different feelings about Star Wars. But I was curious, when you're editing that book and you've got such great writers and artists on it, was it at all, in your mind, sad when you knew the book was going to come to an end? Or was it just kind of like, it ends, something else will begin?
I mean, again, you're asking me to access memories that are too old, but I do. I love the book. I'm sure I was sad. It's always sad when a book dies, you know, and a lot of it, like Spider-Woman, you know, people weren't buying it, even though, like, they had, like, Chris Claremont and Steve Lealoa. There was, like, a dream team doing amazing work, and the sales kept sinking. At the time, we thought, you know, is it the female lead? That's the problem, because, you know, the sad thing about comics is that male leads sell better than female leads, you know. Although Captain Marvel and Storm, the two female lead books I just did, they both sold out and went to second printing. So
great.
That's a good sign for female that there's more female readers. I credit people like Kelly Sue DeConnick with bringing more female readers into the business. But, Cynthia Martin and Joe Duffy, they were a dream team. They knew so much about Star Wars. It was one of those jobs as an editor where you put two people together that really knew what they were doing and you just got out of their way. So, and in a way, I had, Chris Claremont and all the mutant books, because there were so many crossovers and so many books and various writers involved. There's a lot more work to that kind of editing, because you've got so many balls in the air that you're spinning and juggling and keeping track of, and so many complicated storylines that, Joe and Cynthia Martin, that was a book that I really just didn't have to do much on. They were like a dream team. I just stayed out of their way and fought with Lucasfilm when Lucasfilm got upset at something, you know? That was kind of my job there. But also, I think that was the time when the toy books, because I was the editor for a while of ROM, Micronauts, and it was a period when the toy books started not doing so well. Hmm. So it could be that, or it had been too long since the last movie. Who knows why the sales were sinking, but, it certainly has come back in a big way. Yeah. And believe me, toy properties, if we can look at Barbie,
yeah.
It seems like toy properties are back in a big way.
I would say so. And my last comic book related questions, obviously I don't do politics or anything like that, but it's a societal question. Back in Marvel Comics Presents 151 and 150 and 151, you introduced Jesse Drake, brand new character, first transgender mutant. I remember reading comics in this time. I got Alpha Flight 106 off the shelf, where we find the reveal that North Star is gay. I don't remember anybody being upset about these things as they are today. And I'm not sure if it's because of the internet or what.
It was, well, I think it was also the times. Like, there were a lot of trans people in New York City, in my neighborhood where I lived. I had a lot of friends in the East Village that were trans and or in various stages of, gender fluid, even though I don't think nobody used that term back then,
right.
Gender fluid, but it was certainly the beginning of it. And like I said, David Bowie's androgyny made me curious, and that it was a little bit of an influence for Longshot. So it really just came out of having friends and wanting my friends to be represented in comics. And it seemed perfect for Typhoid Mary, because she, one of her personas, Bloody Mary, is like a man-hating feminist.
Uh-huh.
And she like once went into she robbed a police station of all the files on battered women in order to go eye for an eye, beat up every man that had, the same blows that he gave his wife or his girlfriend or whatever. So these stories were nobody gave me any blowback for doing what would be considered too transgressive today. And so Jesse Drake, who, knew she was a girl from the moment she was, could think, was a girl. There, it was just because she was, her sex assignment was male, she was a girl. So it was a good situation to anger Typhoid Mary, Bloody Mary. Like, her first reaction is, what do you mean? You're a boy. I don't like boys. I hate, I'm mad at you. And then they became friends. So it was kind of a nice little bit to put in there. And then, I would have brought her back and done more with her, but I don't think the times were right to, actually make it a full-blown character.
Yeah, just very interesting that, this was, like I said, with North Star 2 and Alpha Flight, as a collector and a fan back then, I don't remember anyone batting an eye, whereas now that would be like an outrage. People would get so upset. It's just, it's interesting. I just kind of wanted to get your take on what has changed in the past, 20 years or so.
Yeah.
And to shift gears briefly, I know you've, I don't want to keep you too much longer, but I got to talk about your, you teach screenwriting. Not only have you written, you know, you've done stuff, screenwriting and filmmaking and documentary work, but you teach screenwriting as well.
I teach filmmaking. Uh-huh. I teach screenwriting. I have taught screenwriting a lot. I used to have a screenwriting magazine and I was a screenwriter, and you know, I used to be a working screenwriter with, and had one film made. And then I had a friend who had started a film school in Haiti. So I went down there and started teaching film. And I think what happens is that when you've written a ton of stuff, like I've written movies, journalism, theater, comics, fiction, so much stuff, at some point in your life, I think it's a good thing to just sort of step aside and help young writers. So
yeah.
I started doing that in pretty much the year 1996, 1997, around then. I started going to Haiti, teaching film in Haiti. And then the aughts, the 2000s, were a lot about teaching film. And I traveled around. I taught on indigenous reservations in the Arctic Circle. I taught all over the place. I did kind of a boot camp. And it's really fun because everybody's got a story. We want diversity in story. So it's really a matter of empowering young people who think they don't have a voice into helping them get a story out, and then showing them that they can be a writer. You know,
with the different places you've done these reservations, like you mentioned in Haiti, is there a language barrier to, obviously, you know, obviously there's a small barrier, but is there, when you're teaching screenwriting and teaching filmmaking, is that a hurdle, or is it just it's storytelling? And
it's a hurdle. I have some French and a little bit of Haitian Creole. It's very much like French, but you know, so I can have conversationally get by in terms of like going to the market and buying vegetables for dinner in the streets of Haiti, but teaching film, it's like a higher, more sophisticated language talk about camera angles and shots. And so I used a lot of clips, a lot of photos, because I had a huge library of films that I use to teach, because there are particular scenes that show particular things that, like, these two people aren't getting along. If you're going to have them sit next to each other, light each one differently, or have them sit where there's like literally a pole between them, or, you know, whatever your shot is, the visual storytelling, I have like a repertoire of shots that I use to help get that basic. And it's the same in comics. It's two images next to each other tell a third idea. And that's like your basic montage theory that goes back to Sergei Eisenstein. And it's like, you know, show a person's face and then show it raining. Face plus rain might mean sadness.
Okay.
Show a person's face and then show birds flying. Face plus birds flying means they want to get out of here. You know, those are very literal examples. But in film and comics, you can juxtapose images in a way that speak louder than whatever blah, blah you're putting in there. And it's very difficult with superhero stories because they're only 20 pages long. You have to have a fight scene. And so you don't have a lot that you can play with. And that's why the seeds for me was where I could really go nuts with. And with David Aja, working with him, he's such a master. I could really finally sort of do the things I wanted to do in terms of like, someone's talking, but the image is the way the pig is looking at the farmer. The farmer is loading his gun, but the image is the way like the mushrooms at the bottom of the tree are, you know. So it's sort of like you can do more of that really beautiful film language if you have enough pages. And David did that book with a 9-panel grid, so it's like a masterclass in montage theory of storytelling, you know?
Yeah.
So it's, and in fact, if you know Panel by Panel, Panel by Panel is like this great Eisner award winning magazine that it's online. Husan is the editor of it. He's also a great letterer. And I highly recommend that magazine if you want to get to the real, like he did, they did a, almost a whole issue just on the seeds. And if you want to like learn the art of storytelling in comics, his magazine is a great resource for young writers.
And we'll put a link to that as well. If you're listening to this, just scroll down to the bottom of the page. We'll have a link to that in the show notes for panel to panel as well. I don't want to keep it too much longer. I've got one last question. As the editor of Scenario Magazine, you got to interview a lot of great filmmakers, Steven Soderbergh, you got to Chris Nolan, Mel Brooks, Francis Ford Coppola. What was your favorite interview that you personally ever got to do with whoever it might have been?
I mean, you know, they were all great. I mean, I had fun with everyone and I learned from everyone. It's probably Francis Coppola was the one who I really learned the most from. He had a 30-year career by the time I got to interview him. And so I read 30 years worth of interviews. And then I went to visit him at his vineyard and I walked in and I was interviewing him about the conversation. And I walked in and I said, oh, my God, I'm so nervous. I know everything about you and you know nothing about me. And he said, well, that's the key to the film, the conversation we're about to talk about. And, you know, it just went from there. And he even gave that was right before we started the school in Haiti. So he even gave us some seed money to help us buy the first cameras.
Oh, wow.
for that school. And when you meet someone like Francis Ford Coppola, he's so prescient. He's such a deep thinker. He's such a humanitarian. I mean, he got it, what we were trying to do in Haiti. He got it right away. And he, you know, he wanted to help us. And it was a very, and we stayed friends. And it's a very different experience than when you kind of go to interview some young, hotshot, brand new screenwriter director that
right.
gives you like an hour of their office time and then boots you out and it's got nothing human about it.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, because at different points in your career, you know, when you're at the beginning of your career, I had some amazing interviews with like Chris Nolan, Darren Aronofsky, because I was interviewing them on their very first films. And, you know, and then you get this like career where you're like out there and you're busy and you're making a ton of films. And then the other thing that's fun is the old timers, like the ones that have already done a huge career. And they're like, they're like just so sweet. I mean, Mel Brooks was so sweet to talk to.
I can only imagine. Oh.
You know, Steve Martin was just lovely. I mean, and Steve Martin was at that point very much didn't want to be seen as the funny guy anymore. And he had a column in the New Yorker that was just so well written. And, you know, it was just so you meet people at different points in their life. And they all taught me so much. Like you interview them, but you learn with every interview.
And that's why I love doing interviews with people like you, because you have this wealth of knowledge. And I feel like in just this time, I've only scratched the surface of what you and I could talk about. But I put a cap on it. I want to make sure I didn't take up too much of your time.
Thank you.
For those of you listening, check out AnnieNocenti.com. That's her website. Really cool. And you can see all the other stuff that we didn't get to talk about, like producing, consulting, and writing narratives for museum projects like Magic City and other stuff like that. So much we could talk about. Hopefully down the road, we can have you back on again if you're up for it.
Yeah, sure. Yeah, thank you.
Thank you.
And have a great day.
You too. Thanks so much. And that's going to do it. Another show in the books. My thanks to Ann Nocenti for her time. Great to talk to her. Hopefully I'll get to meet her one day because I've got a ton of comics I'd love for her to sign, as well as some posters as well. But such a great person, and hopefully we can get her back on the show at another time, hopefully live on the radio. That'd be great. My thanks also to Kokomo Toys in Kokomo, Indiana, our toy partner. Normally, if I was live in the studio, we would have done a toy trivia giveaway where we give away some toys. They've got a bunch of us. As we're approaching Christmas, I'm going to try to knock some of these out and do some more and get some of the more toys out to you listeners. So make sure you tune in next Sunday for our Kokomo toy trivia. We'll do a question at the very beginning of the show, and we'll send you a nice prize pack courtesy of our friends at Kokomo Toys in Kokomo, Indiana. Thanks to our premier sponsor, the City of St. Charles, the Greater St. Charles Convention and Visitors Bureau, DiscoverStCharles.com. And of course, thanks to Larry Bugs Comics and Games. Find them on Instagram and Facebook and like them there. Give them a follow. We appreciate all the support. The show would not be possible without the support of our sponsors, so please go support them. And thank you, as always, to Joey V for making this show sound as good as it does. He put all this together. I just sent him the pieces. So if you're listening to this right now, Joey V is the main guy to thank for how good this sounds. That's going to do it. Until next week, my friends.
It's not in the way you watch I sound be. It's not in the way you watch the flash. It's not in the way you love Scott.
Thank you, Mojo World. Good night.
Hey, kids. Are your parents about to buy you a shiny new toy from Amazon?
Hi, I'm Chucky. Wanna play?
Well, don't be selfish. Share some of that money with us. Before going on Amazon, make sure to type in bit.ly/geektome in the web browser. It will look just like Amazon.com, except it'll say Referral Geek to Me Radio up top. And then when you check out, a tiny percentage will go to support the show without costing you 1 cent more. So before your parents get you that gizmo, gadget, or widget, make sure they type in bit.ly/geektome in the web browser.
bit.ly/geektome, bit.ly/geektome.